Henry, we ready? Good morning, everyone. I want to thank everyone for joining us this morning. Right, to the left. And is the Zoom following us?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to thank everyone for joining us this morning as we have this chus of hearing words of Torah from two wonderful Talmidei Chachamim. The first being Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz Shlita. The last time Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz was in the shul, I was planning on introducing him, but ended up spending Shabbos in the basement with my six-year-old son during my COVID quarantine. So it is a schus to be able to introduce him now. And I'm going to preface both speakers. I'll introduce Rabbi Leibowitz now and then later Rabbi Belzon with a brief thought from Orach Chaim Siman Tafresh Ayin, which is the beginning of the Shulchan Aruch discussion of Hilchos Chanukah. The very beginning of Hilchos Chanukah, the Tur, and later the Shulchan Aruch, have a discussion as to whether or not there is any notion of Seudas Mitzvah on Chanukah. Is there any value to having all of the Chanukah parties that we host, all of the special meals that we have over the course of Chanukah? Is it really part of the halachic celebration of Chanukah? And the truth is, it's a machlokas rishonim. Some maintain that it is, that there's an inyan of simcha, at least on a derabanan level, over the course of Chanukah. And others, the Maharam, maintain that there really is no such notion, because Chanukah is not a Yom Tov of Simcha, the way other Yomim Tovim are constructed, but rather it's constructed as Yimei Halel V'Hoda'a. The real primary focus of Chanukah is thanks, is gratitude, appreciating all that the Ribono Shel Olam has done for us over the course of our history and all that he continues to do for us now. And while there are different approaches in the poskim as to what exactly we paskin with regards to Chanukah, there is a notion of Seuda, there isn't. There is a perhaps value of Seuda with words of Torah and with Shiros V'Sishpachos, as the Rama says, to make sure that it's a Seudas Mitzvah. Certainly in the context of Chanukah, that theme of Halel V'Hodah, no matter which perspective you take, is really central to what it is we do. And it is that theme that I really want to introduce our speakers this morning. Of course, I'll note that on a cultural level, that's certainly appropriate to the Thanksgiving holiday, which from, again, on a broad American cultural level, is an extraordinarily positive cultural staple in American culture, forcing people to think about what exactly they're grateful for, and at least in its early iterations, forcing people to think about what they were grateful to God for. But when we move from the cultural niceties and celebrations to chalos, to the realm of halachic and spiritual reality, it is the holiday of Chanukah that really forces us to think about things that we are grateful to the Ribono Shel Olam for. Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz is somebody who in certain ways is difficult to introduce. I don't even know what exactly I can say to do justice to the stature of Rabbi Leibowitz. Fortunately, Chazal give me the out of Ein Omer Mela Mitzvah Shvachos Shel Adam B'Fana. I'm not going to stand here and talk about what a great Talmud Chacham Rabbi Leibowitz is. There's no point in me doing that. It's quite evident. You don't need me to tell you that. I can, and perhaps will at a future point, talk about Rabbi Leibowitz's incredible character and persona and his midos, the way that he exhibits just the greatest warmth and caring for every individual, takes time for people. I'm not even going to talk about that now this morning, maybe on a future occasion. I just want to contextualize, again, something that I think you all know about Rabbi Leibowitz, but I'm just going to try to just contextualize for a moment. And that is that if you had to identify the greatest Marbitzei Torah in the world today, and I'm not talking about our little corner of the world in Teaneck or in Bergen County or in New Jersey, the greatest teachers and spreaders of Hashem, his Torah, his message, in the world today, Rabbi Leibowitz would unquestionably be on the short list, the very short list, of greatest Marbitzei Torah in the world. And I think, and this is something that I've noted in the past, this will not be the last time you hear me say this. In B'nai Yeshur, and we at a certain point kind of start to take advantage of the zechuyos, of the opportunities that we have on a regular basis. I will tell you that in many shuls across the country, the one day they have to hear Rabbi Leibowitz is their Matan Torah. It's like Ma'amad Har Sinai. They have the opportunity to hear directly from, I don't mean online, I mean in person, from Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz is the greatest Torah celebration of the year. Here in B'nai Yeshurun, we are very fortunate to hear from the highest caliber of Talmidei Chachamim on quite literally a daily basis. And therefore, it sometimes becomes tempting to say, oh, we have Rabbi Leibowitz here, it's just another Torah opportunity that we have in B'nai Yeshurun. But as we head into the Yimei Halel V'Hoda'a, the days in which we thank Hashem for the opportunities that we have, let us take a moment to stop taking things for granted. The privilege of having Rabbi Leibowitz here this morning is an immense, immense zechus. And it is an incredible privilege for us to hear words of Torah from him this morning. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Schreier. It's such an unbelievable inspiration to see the great work that you're doing here in the short time you've been serving as the Rav of this holy congregation, and you should continue for many, many years in good health and enjoy nachas from the Kehila as they gain nachas and inspiration from you. Rishus Rabbi Belzon as well. This morning's series of shiurim, or the set of shiurim, is L'Zecher Nishmas Dr. Belzon Zichrono Levracha, who I was not fortunate enough to know, but I am fortunate enough to know. His two sons are Dr. Avram Belzon and Rabbi Belzon Shlita, who's going to be speaking after me this morning. And I remember when I was Menachem Avel, my friends in Eretz Yisrael, one of the things that emerged about Dr. Belzon, and one of the things that I've heard over the years, was not only what the kind of Talmud Chacham that he was, and the kind of interest that he took in being Marbitz Torah in this community and many others, but how much of a Mokir Rabbanan he was, how much he respected, loved, and adored Talmidei Chachamim. And that was evident through his multiple connections with some very, very great Talmidei Chachamim. And for that reason and other reasons, I decided that this morning I want to talk about an Adam Gadol that was recently Nifter. I think it's important that when an Adam Gadol passes away, that when Klal Yisrael loses a great, great Talmud Chacham, a Jew has to think about what was lost, contemplate the towering personality, what made that person unique. And this is even true, and it's especially true, of Talmidei Chachamim that maybe we weren't so familiar with, people we didn't hear about every day, people that we wouldn't necessarily understand what the loss is, unless we hear a little bit more about them. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the name Rav Shlomo Fischer. Rav Shlomo Fischer, Zecher Tzaddik Levracha, was a towering genius and somebody who made himself accessible to people in our world and in every segment of Klal Yisrael. When I was learning in Karen Biavne, he used to give shiurim in Karen Biavne every once in a while, and he'd give shiurim anywhere, and it was an event when he would come, because he was such a towering bucky in everything, in Shas, Poskim, Nigla, Nister, other Chachmos, just everything. So it appears to me, and this is, it's somewhat painful to say, but it appears to me that Klal Yisrael as a whole, to a certain degree, has been misatzel behespedo shel chacham. That maybe we haven't given proper respect to the loss of one of the gedolim of our generation. The Gemara tells us, kol misatzel behespedo shel chacham, ro'i l'kov ro'b'chayev. That it's not a good thing, loosely translated, not a good thing to be misatzel behespedo shel chacham, to not give proper due to a Talmud Chacham who passes away. So considering that Rav Moshe Shapiro used to say, Rav Moshe Shapiro was someone who was not easily impressed, he would say about Rav Shlomo that he looms seven dargos above the world's greatest lumdim. So I feel that there should be more spoken about him. So this morning, my plan was to share some Divrei Torah from Rav Shlomo Fischer. Not my own Divrei Torah, it's not even my style. It's a very different style, doesn't really... It's hard for me to connect to because there's so much Torah Sanistar that's mixed in with the Torah Sanigla and Gematrios and things like that, also mixed in together with the Lamdus. Not even so much my style, but I thought, coming up on Chanukah, we'll share some Divrei Torah from Rav Shlomo Fischer. But before I speak about Rav Shlomo Fischer's Divrei Torah, and before I share his Divrei Torah on Chanukah, I started to think, I need to learn a little bit more about this man. And it happens to be that I have two very close friends who were very close with Rav Shlomo Fischer. My friend Rav Natana Lauer, Tani to me, but was a chavrusa of Rav Shlomo Fischer for every Shabbos afternoon. He lived in the same building, and he used to go to Rav Fischer's apartment at 2:15 p.m. on Shabbos afternoon after lunch. They used to have such a thing that they would finish lunch at 2:15 p.m. That's, I guess, a Yerushalmi minute that maybe we could import to America. So they would finish at 2:15, and he would sit and learn with him from 2:15 until Mincha. When's Mincha? It depends. In the wintertime, Mincha's a little earlier. In the summertime, Mincha's a little later. Didn't remember Shostrov Sadlovsky Shlita. They would learn until Mincha, all the way until Mincha, straight, no breaks. And I have another good friend, Rav Mati Neuberger, who also became very close to Rav Shlomo Fischer. He would sometimes go to Eretz Yisrael and just spend a week to learn with Rav Shlomo, just to learn from this giant. So I just thought it would be appropriate to give a little bit. So I called both of them up and I asked them, what can you tell me? And each one kept me on the phone for an hour describing Rav Shlomo Fischer. So before we get to Hanukkah, I got 2 hours of stuff on Rav Shlomo Fischer, and then we'll get to Hanukkah. That's a pet peeve of mine. I don't like when rabbis make jokes about speaking long, because usually nobody finds that funny. Everyone's like, haha, that's really not funny. But we'll discuss a little bit about his life, and then hopefully share a little bit of his Torah as it relates to Hanukkah, because I just found it so inspiring. Not inspiring in the kind of way where you think to yourself, oh, I can do that, because there's almost nothing that you hear about Rav Shlomo Fischer where you know, people like me and you can say, oh, I could be like that. It's like when people say about Rav Eliashiv, yeah, when he was 6 years old, he started learning 20 hours a day, and he stopped doing that when he died, when he was 106. So for 100 years, every day, he learned for 20 hours. Like, you don't look at that and say, yeah, I think I could do that. No, but you look at that and you say, thank God the world had something like that, that the world had such a picture of Hasmada, that the world... So I think in many of the things we learn about Rav Shlomo Fischer, it's not an I can do that kind of inspiration. It's an inspiration of seeing what a human being can become and seeing what a person can be and having an appreciation that we shared the same earth. We walked on the same earth. We walked on the same planet at the same time as people of this caliber. Rav Fischer was Yerushalmi from the Prushim. He grew up in total poverty. He became a Yassam at a very young age, and he would often speak about how difficult his childhood was. He had an older brother who was also a very chashva Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Yisrael Yaakov Fischer, who was the Av Beis Din of the Yed HaRedus and the author of Tshuvas Evan Yisrael. He used to refer to his brother as Achi Agadol Mimeni B'Chachmo B'Minyan, the one who was greater than him, both in wisdom as well as influence, that he would refer to his brother in that way. Rabbi Fischer himself was a Dayan in the Rabbanut Beis Din, but they were clearly an old Yerushalmi family from that type of Jew. He became a Talmud of Rav Lezer Yudel Finkel in the Mir at the age of 10 or 11 years old. Now, the Mir Yeshiva typically does not accept 10 and 11-year-old Bachrim. What happened was, he was in, I don't know, 5th grade or 6th grade, and he was in a class with other boys in 5th or 6th grade, and boys in 5th or 6th grade sometimes misbehave, because they're boys in 5th and 6th grade, and that's what they're supposed to do. So he couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle the way the other boys in his class were behaving, and he would come home crying all the time, and he would tell his sister that the boys in his class don't have any kavod Torah, and they're not treating the Rebbeim properly, and they're not behaving the way they're supposed to, and it was tearing him apart. So his sister brought him to Rav Lezer Yudel Finkel and begged Rav Lezer Yudel to take him into the yeshiva, and Rav Lezer Yudel felt bad for a Yassam, so he was convinced and he took him in, and he became very close to Rav Lezer Yudel Finkel over the years based on that Rachmanis that he had on a Yassam. The Brisker Rav was also a big influence on his life. He once spoke about how the Brisker Rav, he once went to visit the Brisker Rav, and he heard the Brisker Rav was sitting on a couch or something, or on a chair, and he was saying, muttering to himself or singing to himself, Al Yishalel HaChacham B'Chachmaso, Al Yishalel HaGibor B'Gvuraso, Al Yishalel HaShir B'Ashro, reciting that Pasuk, El B'Zos Yishalel HaMasalel Haskel V'Yodeyosi, and to be also Chesed Mishpat Staka, and he kept on repeating that to himself, and he said, Rav Shlomo Fischer said, I was very moved by that, because people say that Briskers don't learn Musar. But here the Brisker Rav was sitting there repeating that Pasuk over to himself. It's a different kind of Musar. It's not bop you over the head Musar, but it's a Musar of thinking about what's valuable in life and contemplating it and spending time contemplating it. So Rav Shlomo Fischer ended up as a Dayan in the Rabbanut Beis Din. He was the author of a Svarim called Beis Yishai, and he was also edited a number of other Svarim, the Kovitz Biurim of Rav Chanan Wasserman, the Kovitz Shmuels of Rav Chanan Wasserman. He helped compile the Sefer Or Hashem of Rav Chastai Krashkas, and also the Perish HaGra and the Mazalos and Torah HaKabbalah. He was very, very broad. So I want to share with you some of the highlights of his quality traits. First of all, other Gedolim had great respect for him. Already 50 years ago or so, the Stipler came out with a set of Sfarim called Kehilas Yaakov. The Stipler Gaon, who used to be known as the Stipler, now he's known as the father of Rav Chaim Kanievsky, but he used to be Rav Chaim, was known as the son of the Stipler. So the Stipler wrote Sefer Kehilas Yaakov, and Rav Shlomo got the Sefer and immediately wrote Ha'aros on every volume of the Sefer and sent it to the Stipler. The Stipler wrote back a letter. He was stunned by the quality of the Ha'aros. So he sent back a letter to Rav Shlomo Fisher in which he referred to Rav Shlomo as the Pe'er Hador. And that title was never given by the Stipler to anybody else, so much so that later in his life, when he was hired as Rosh Yeshiva Nitri by Rav Elefant, Rav Shach was very upset because Rav Shlomo Fisher was a shtickle Zionist. I don't know if by our standards he was a Zionist, but certainly by Rav Shach's standards he was a Zionist. So Rav Shach was very upset that he was given such a prominent position. So Rav Elefant brought the letter. He had a copy of the letter that the Stipler wrote about Rav Shlomo Fisher, brought it to Rav Shach, said, look, the Stipler over here calls him Pe'er Hador. The man was 50 years old, maybe, when he was called Pe'er Hador by the Stipler, and that was the end of the conversation. And it didn't matter what his what his take on the Medina was at that point in time. He was a Rebbe of the current Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, Rav Yitzchak Yosef. He actually helped him compile the Alkut Yosef. You'll see beautiful pictures sometimes of Shlomo Fisher sitting with Rav Avadia. They say when he walked into a room, Rav Avadia stood up for him, as did the Stipler, as did Rav Chaim Kanievsky. He very often held unpopular beliefs. One of the best vartlach in his Drashos Beis Yishai, Rabbi Neuberger told me, is a vart that he has about Yerushalayim. He says that the makom chibur between Yira and Shalom, or between Ahava and Yira, is Yerushalayim. It's an ir shechubra la yachtav. It's a place where we bind together, we link together these two midos of Ahava and Yira, of Din and Shalom, or Yira and Shalom. And he says that chibur is the chibur of Moshe and Aaron. Rashom Fisher explained, he said that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to take Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. And Moshe Rabbeinu kept on refusing. Why was he refusing? Was it all anivus? It was just that I'm not worthy, I don't want to go. What was he saying? What was his point? What was his argument to the Ribbono Shalom? And Rav Fisher suggested his argument was that Moshe Rabbeinu represented Midas Hadin. And he felt that that was not going to be healthy for Klal Yisrael, that they needed a little more of a Midas HaRachamim. They needed a little more of a Midas HaShalom, of a Midas HaAhava, a little less Yira, a little more Ahava. And he felt unqualified to do so. And the Ribbono Shalom said, you're right, and that's why you're going to have a partner. Aaron is going to come with you, because Aaron represents Shalom. Aaron HaKohen is the Ohev Shalom V'Rodev Shalom. Aaron represents Rachamim. And it's that combination of Din and Rachamim, that fusion of Din and Rachamim, that's going to be what helps the Klal Yisrael get out of Mitzrayim. And that's why he says Shmuel HaNavi is the embodiment of this combination of Din and Rachamim, of this combination of the Din of Moshe Rabbeinu and the Rachamim of Aaron HaKohen. That's why the pasuk tells us that Moshe Aaron b'chanav Shmuel b'korei Shemo, and the Gemara tells us we did recently in Daf Yomi, for those who are doing Daf Yomi, that Shmuel on a certain level is the equivalent of Moshe and Aaron together, because Shmuel Hanavi represented bringing both of those midos together. And Shmuel Hanavi was the one who brought us Yerushalayim, who discovered Yerushalayim, because he encapsulated both Moshe and Aaron. And Rav Shlomo Fisher writes in a footnote, and by the way, Shmuel's yahrzeit is Chavches Iyah. He just leaves it at that. So he just writes that in a footnote, doesn't say any further commentary. So Rav Mati Neuberger told me, when he saw that, he said, oh, obviously, he's referring to the fact that it's Yom Yerushalayim, that Shmuel and Avi's Yartzai is Yom Yerushalayim, because Shmuel represents Yerushalayim. And he was talking to a friend of his, and he said, no way, Rav Shlomo Fisher wouldn't talk about Yom Yerushalayim. There's no way he meant that. He was just saying, because he knows everything, so he's just mentioning Shmuel and Avi's Yartzai. So he went to, so Rav Mati said, he asked Rav Fisher, he said, did you mean Yom Yerushalayim? He said, of course I meant Yom Yerushalayim. What, they are just writing Yartzai of people? Of course I meant Yom Yerushalayim. He said, so why didn't you spell it out? clouds. I don't need to be put in cherim. Everyone knows what I mean. And I have plausible deniability. I'm perfectly fine. You know, leaving it as is. And that's what he did. His mastery of Kala Torah Kula was just unbelievable. Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebalpeh, Nigla Nister. Kant, Freud. That's not Torah, but in Chachmos, anything that was a Chachma, he had his mind was a sponge for anything that was Chachma. He said he had problems remembering anything that wasn't Chachma. He couldn't remember people's names. He asked him whose roommates were in yeshiva. He couldn't remember their names because names aren't really a Chachma. But things that are a Chachma, his mind was just a sponge for Chachma. And he would discuss Chachma with anybody. He had an open door to everybody. Rabbanim would come from the Gush. Academics would come to talk to him about Girsaos and history and things like that. Anybody who wanted to be a Talmud, his door was wide open. He defended, and the idea that he saw everything as one picture is sometimes disorienting. You look at his drushos, and he quotes Maharam Mekomos that don't belong in drushos. They sound like they more belong in a Lamdash Sefer and Shas. You look in his Lamdash farm, and he has Maharam Mekomos that sound like they belong in a Kabbalah Shir. So he defended himself. He said, I can quote the Arizal in Chidushim and Shas because I quote Reb Chaim in my drushos also. Meaning, everything was Chativa Achas. It was all one unit. Each time he learned with my friend Rabbi Tani Lauer, he would say certain Maharam Mekomos, like a Kovitz Shurim from Rav Elchanan, a Kovitz Arus, a Chazanish, a Ktsais, a Riki Veger, those were his favorite Sfarim. And he would often say, anybody who doesn't know this Maharam Mekom can't call themselves a Yeshiva Bacher. And Rabbi Lauer told me that over the year, every time he learned, there were four or five more Maharam Mekomos that if you didn't know them, you can't call yourself a Yeshiva Bacher. So he said, over the years, he discovered that if you don't know all of Ktsos, all of Rabbi Kiva Eger, all of Kovitz Arus, you can't call yourself a Yeshiva Bacher. He was, his Hasmada was also just absolutely remarkable. As I mentioned, Rabbi Lauer told me he would start with him at 2:15 and continue until Mincha, whenever Mincha was, without not just no Sichas Chulin, without a break for anything. There was just total focus, total concentration. Rav Mati Neuberger told me that he was once supposed to conclude a learning session with him at 11 o'clock at night. They were going to learn from after Maariv. Maariv ended at 9 o'clock. He said before Maariv, he would always, or before any tefillah, he was a half hour before the tefillah, he would say, I need to do achanos, and he'd throw Mati out of the room, and he would do it. He had no idea what he was doing for that half hour, but he needed to do achanos. So they were supposed to learn after Maariv from 9 to 11. And at 2:30 in the morning, Rav Shlomo said, what time is it? And he said, 2:30 in the morning. I was hoping you would ask that 3 hours ago. But he just completely lost himself. I once had a similar experience with Morena Rav Shechter Shlita. We went to learn with him at 7 p.m. on a Thursday night. We used to go for a short tekufa to learn with him in his apartment on Thursday nights. And it was supposed to be 7 to 8. And at 11 o'clock, he was struggling on a Rabbi Kiva Eger and Hilchos Mezuzah or something. At 11 o'clock, he looked up and he said, what time is it? We said it's 11 o'clock. He said, I missed Maariv. How come no one told me I had to? You know, so it was sometimes a person could be so focused and so zoned in on Torah. It's a beautiful thing to see Hasmada in such a way. But it was more than that, because Rosh Hashanah never sat when he learned. He stood up. He had a hanaga that he could only stand when he was learning Torah. Why he had that hanaga, you can never get out of him. You can't. He wouldn't answer questions about his hanagos. Rav Mati told me every time he asked him about something that he did, the answer was always the same two words, Eineni Klum. I'm a nobody. Don't ask me about what I do. So when they would ask him why he stands, you know, I focus better when I stand. Focus better. He was 85 years old. His son would come twice during their learning session to wrap the bandages around his feet because he was hurting his feet so much because he refused to sit while he was learning. And all he did all day is learn. But he wouldn't sit when he was learning. Probably it relates to his Kavod HaTorah and what the Gemara tells us at the end of Masechta Sota, that it's a sign of a minimizing of Kavod HaTorah over the generations when people started to sit when they learned. But that was his Hasmada, that he was able to focus in such a way. In yeshiva, he used to go to yeshiva for the whole week. He only came home on Shabbos. From the day after his Shavuot Brachos, he lived in yeshiva the whole week. My friend Rabbi Lauer asked him, you know, should a person who's a big masman make such a tanai when they get married, a tanai with their wife that they could only are going to come home on Shabbos? He said, what do you mean, a tanai? That's usher to do. You're not allowed to live like that. So, you know, but what do you do? Nah, this is a different story. His wife was just Moser Nefesh her entire life. She gave up her entire life for him to be able to do this. And Shiva, they had a bed for him. And the bed, when guys would take a peek in the room, the bed was full of Sfarim. so many Svarim that it's impossible that he cleared away all those Svarim every night. More likely, he took two chairs, put them together, and took a nap for whatever amount of time that he slept. It was just an unusual way to live. In fact, when he was on the Rabbanut Beis Din, he found that the Beis Din took too much time away from him. He didn't enjoy it at all, and because to work through the intricacies of a case and work with people and try to get them to some sort of pshara, it was just too much. So he decided that he was only going to do the Gittin in the Beis Din. And sometimes he'd do 40 Gittin in a day. He was one of the world's experts on Gittin. Many of the minhagim that they do in Yerushalayim of how their Masada Gittin today were because of him. He worked very closely with another great unsung hero and underappreciated Gaon, Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, in terms of arranging all the Gittin in Yerushalayim. In fact, Rav Mati told me he asked Rav Shlomo Fisher once, 10 years ago, he asked him, if there's anyone in our generation, they could say a bracha b'shem u'malchusan. You know, how many people are there that you could say a bracha for them for seeing a Talmud Chacham? Chazal said, the Gemara says, you say a bracha when you see a Talmud Chacham. So Rav Shlomo Fisher said, Efshar of Zalman Nechemia. Now think about who else is alive today. Who else was alive 10 years ago? He said, Efshar of Zalman Nechemia. Maybe you could say a bracha of Zalman Nechemia, but there's nobody else of that caliber. These were these two Gaonim. Rabbi Chalap actually tried to get him to teach in YU once. Not in the mothership, not in Washington Heights, but on the Gris campus in Arizona. And he actually came and he gave a few model lessons in YU. For whatever reason, it didn't work out. He didn't have any money, so Rabbi Chalap was trying to help him out. They had nothing. Certainly before he was on the Rabbanut Beis Din, they really had nothing. He would never accept to be a sandik at a bris because he thought it was Gnevis Das. Because people are only asking him because they assume that he's a tzaddik, but he knows that he's not a tzaddik. He wouldn't give people brachos. The Gemara says, afil birchas hadyot shouldn't be kalabei enecha. That even a birchas hadyot is valuable. Even when a nobody gives you a bracha, it should be valuable. He said, yes, I know that. But when people are asking me for a bracha, they think I'm not a hadyot. They think that I'm a Talmud Chacham, and I know that I'm not a Talmud Chacham, so it's Gnevis Das for me to give them a bracha. So he refused to give anyone a bracha. His wife would tell the story that she once wanted a bracha from him. I don't know what she needed in particular, but she went into him, she asked him for a bracha. And he said, no, I don't give brachas. You're probably also asking me because you think I'm a Talmud Chacham. I'm not a Talmud Chacham. She said, what? You're not a Talmud Chacham. I've been an almana mechayim my whole life. For decades, you go to yeshiva the whole week, I never see you, and you're not a Talmud Chacham? And she said he was visibly shaken, and he said, you're right, I need to learn better. And he went right back to learning, so that he could hopefully become a Talmud Chacham. He was also a great, great makubal. His wife said that he didn't like when people would look around through the Svarim that he was learning because she realized that there were a lot of Kabbalah Svarim there and he didn't want them to know how much he was Osek in those in Yanim. He was a master of all streams of Kabbalah. For those who learn Kabbalah Sa'arizal, there are four different approaches to Kabbalah Sa'arizal, and usually they're very, if you're a Rashash person, you're not a Grub person. If you're a Grub person, you're not a Balatanya, Baal Shem Tov person. There are different streams of how to learn Kabbalah Sa'arizal. He was much more inclusive of all the streams, which is a very rare thing. He had a very, very difficult childhood, and he started learning Kabbalah at a very young age. The rumor has it that when he was sick, that he thought that was an onesh for learning Kabbalah at such a young age. And his Rebbetzin he appreciated more than anything. His Rebbetzin, when someone would ask him to daven for them, he would always say, "I'm not roi l'kach. My tefillos aren't going to be answered, but I'll give your name." And everyone assumed that he was going to run straight to Rav Chaim Kanievsky or something and give the name. He would always go to the Rebbetzin and give the name. Lemisha Roy Lekach. That's a person who is genuinely Moser Nefesh for Torah, who really is worthy of such a thing. The Rebbetzin said that he used to buy her a Sefer every year, every Yontif. For Yontif, Gemara says you should buy Nashim Baroy Lehem and you Mesameach everybody with that which gives them Simcha. So he felt his Rebbetzin got more Simcha from Svarim than from anything else. So he would buy her a Sefer every year of Yontif and write an inscription. She had a bookshelf of just the Svarim that he bought her over the years. One of her friends, she said, one of her friends once came in and saw her learning one of the Svarim. She was a real Mulumeda. She knew a lot. And one of her friends saw her learning a sefer, and her friend said to her, "What's that sefer?" And she said, "Oh, this is my husband got it for me before Yontif, in honor of Yontif." So her friend said, "Oh yeah, my husband once bought me a sefer in honor of Yontif before Yontif, and the next Yontif I bought him a necklace before Yontif to show him what I thought." But the Rebbetzin didn't mind. That's what she enjoyed. And during one of the, Rabbi Tani Lauer told me, during one of the more recent rocket attacks in Eretz Yisrael, he stopped on the way to the Miklat to make sure the Rebbetzin was okay, because she was alone, right? He was in yeshiva the whole time. So he stopped by to make sure that she was going to get down to the Miklat. And the door was always open. You never had to, you know, you'd sometimes like try to make a noise, but the door was always open. And he went into the apartment, and she refused to go to the shelter. And she said, "The walls of this house are so full of Torah, there's no need to go down anywhere." Halachically, is that the right thing to do? We're not getting into that right now. But that's what she believed, that her home was so saturated in the Siris Nefesh for Torah that nothing could happen. In fact, I'll close with one more story before we get to a few minutes of Torah. That he loved the Chazon Ish, because the Chazon Ish was such an original thinker. The Chazon Ish, essentially, if you ever learn Chazon Ish, he rewrote Shas in the order that he thought it should have been, essentially. The whole way he thinks about things is entirely different than other people's. So that was very much, it spoke to Rav Shlomo. So when he was young, the Chazon Ish had come out, and the Sefer Chazon Ish come out, and no one had it yet. And he was very excited by this. He was a young father of some young children. He had no money. In fact, his wife was from a very chashvi Yerushalmi family. Rav Lezer Yudel was one that convinced her to go out with him. She didn't want to go out with him. He was a yasam with nothing, from nobody. He had not. Why would she? She was a chashva person from the Brand family, a chashva Yerushalmi family. She didn't want to go out with him. But Rav Lezer Yudel said, no, you need to go out with him. So they met for 2 hours or something, and she was blown away. She couldn't believe. She was totally taken by him, by his brilliance and by his Yerushamayim, and by, she was completely blown away. She went back to her, she told the story to Rav Mati. She went back to her parents' apartment. She woke up her father and she said, Abba, right now we need to write a Tanayim. We're getting engaged. He said, okay, good, Malzah, we'll write a Tanayim tomorrow. She said, no, I'm going to change my mind by tomorrow. We have to do it right now. I mean, she understood that that if she thought too much about what her life was going to look like, she wasn't going to have that level of Mesiras Nefesh. But she wanted to take advantage in that moment, that she lived an entire life of Mesiras Nefesh. So one time, her grandfather, who had some money, gave her some money to spend on the family. And she her husband had just told her about the Sefer Chazon Ish. Now, they can never afford a Chazon Ish. She ran to the Meicher Svarim, said, I want to buy the Chazon Ish. Meicher Svarim looked at her like she's from a different planet. You can't afford the Chazon Ish. And she pulls out whatever she had, and she bought the Chazon Ish, and her husband wasn't home. She used to prepare on Friday when he'd come home, or Thursday night, I don't know when he would come home from yeshiva, she would prepare a little bit of food and, you know, for him to eat when he came home. So she prepared the food and put the Sefer Chazon Ish next to it, and she went to the other room and watched when he came home. She pretended she wasn't home. And she told this Maisa to both of my friends, to both of Lauer and to Rav Mati. So apparently it was a maestro she liked telling. So he came home and she was watching how he would react, and he saw the Chazon Ish and he looked up like, this must be a matana min hashamayim. Like, where would a Chazon Ish come from? And then he pushed away the food and he stood up and he opened the Chazon Ish, and for hours he just didn't move. He just devoured the Chazon Ish for hours instead of devouring his dinner. So a very, very special person. So let me share a little bit of, now that I used all my time, a little bit of the drushas of Beis Yishai. One idea that he has on Chanukah. He starts with the same halach in Shulchan Aruch that Rabbi Shrei mentioned before, that in the beginning of Hilchos Chanukah, Shulchan Aruch writes that ribui su'udos that were marbe on Chanukah are su'udos rishus. You can eat all the sufganiyot and all the latkes you want, it's only a su'udos rishus, because the Yom Tov of Chanukah was not a Yom Tov of mishta v'simcha, it was a Yom Tov that's celebrated in other ways. And the Ramah comments on that, v'yesh omrim sheish k'tsas mitzvah b'ribui su'udos v'shem t'bosu ayam chanukah samizbeach. That some say that there's a little bit of a mitzvah of ribu Moisudus and Chanukah, because it's also the time of the Chanukah Samizbeach. So the Mishmur explains that the Melech Samishkan was completed on the 25th of Kislev, so in that sense it was a Chanukah Samizbeach, but it's just that the Mishkan wasn't ultimately erected until Nisan, because that was when Yitzchak was born. He explains in a footnote what it has to do with Yitzchak and why it had to be Dafka when Yitzchak was born, not for now. But Hashem then wanted to pay back Kislev, so he compensated Kislev by giving it the Chanukah space Chashmonai. Kislev was supposed to be the original Chanukah's Hamishkan. Didn't work out because it had to wait for Nisan. So Hashem compensated Kislev by giving the Chanukah space Chashmonai. So the question is, Mechaber says that the meals are only Sudas Rishos because they were never Koveh the days for Mishnah the Simcha. So how does it help to add a second reason beyond the actual Nes Chanukah to elevate the Chiyuv Suda? Meaning, why is Chanukah Samizbeach more of a reason to have a Chiyuv Suda than just the Nes Chanukah itself is a reason to have a Chiyuv Suda? If the Nes Chanukah didn't do it, why does that second reason make it that Suda is more appropriate? Furthermore, the Matamosha writes a remez for the Riboy Sudas B'Chanukah from Pasuk and Parshas Mikates. Yosef says, V'tzvav Tavach V'Achein, and when you combine the Ches of Tavach and the letters of V'Achein, you get the Osios of Chanukah. Also odd, the Sudas Chanukah, what do they have to do with the Suda that Yosef made for his brothers? So Rav Fisher pointed out that in order to understand this, it's important to highlight a medrash of unknown origin, but it's a medrash that's quoted by the Chassam Sofer, and it's quoted by other Svarim as well. The medrash says, Hadudaim nasnu reyach, Elu duda'e ru'uvein. Val pischenu kol megadim, Elu neros Chanukah. The Medrash draws a link somehow between the duda'e ru'uvein, the duda'im of ru'uvein, and the Chanukah, and the neros of Chanukah. So Medrash Rabban Parsh Vayeshev says, that Hashem told Reuven, no one ever did an Avera and did tshuva, v'ata pesachta b'tshuva tchila. You, Reuven, are the first person to ever do tshuva. Chayecha sheben bincha omir poseach b'tshuva tchila, and therefore, I'm going to see to it that your descendant is going to be the one that really starts the tshuva movement. Ve'eze ze Hosheya. And that's a reference to Hosheya, Shenemar, Shuva Yisrael ad Hashem Elokecha. A very odd medrash. The Mefarshim wonder, how can you say that Hosheya is where Tshuva starts? The Torah itself says, V'shavta ad Hashem Elokecha. And all of Navi is about Tshuva, right? All of Navi is about Kali Yisrael Dezaveris, the Navi inspires them to Tshuva. Sefer Shoftim is all about that. That's the whole cycle of Sefer Shoftim. We do Tshuva, then we do Averis again, then we have someone yell at us, then we do Tshuva again. That's how it works. Tshuva didn't start with Hosheya. So he points out the Psikta Rabasi that suggests that what made Hosea was unique was that all the Nevi'im told us to do tshuva, but they didn't tell us what to say. Hosea told us what to say. Kichui machem dvarim v'shuvu el Hashem. What does that mean? Maybe it means, based on what the Shef Shmaitza quotes in his Haktam, and just, even if, you know, whether the Vart is for you or not, just pay attention to the broadness, the range of Makoros that he's quoting over here. The Shef Shmaitza Naktama, in the quotes from the Mahari Moscato, in explaining the value of a tzibur, and this is the yisod that Rav Shlomo Fischer tries to draw out over here. The Gemara in Zvachim Tavayin Ches says that Hapigul Vanoser Vatame Sheblon Zebezev Va'achlan Pater. That if a person takes all these sorts of Isurim, Pigul, Noser, Tame, mixes them all together and eats them, he's Pater. Because Isurim Nevatlan Ze'ezeh, the majority of the mixture is not Pigul, so the Pigul is Batal. The majority of the mixture is not Noser, so the Noser is Batal. And the majority of the mixture is not Tame, so the Tame is Batal. They're all Nevatal each other. Says the Mari Moscato, quoted by the Shef Shmaitza, that if you have murderers and thieves and loan sharks and people who take bribes, they're all mevatel each other because no single group makes up the majority. Meaning, Knesset Yisrael, when we come together, no matter what sorts of averus we're doing, there's variety in the kind that we all have different yetzer haras. There's variety in the kind of averus we do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does a great chesed with us that he allows us to be mevatel each other's averus by having a majority that don't do any given averus. The Ran in Drush Saran in the first Drush explains the Gemara in Krisus Davav called Tainis Shein Ba Miposhe Yisrael Ein. If you have a fast day that does not incorporate Poshe Yisrael, it's not a tainus, because we learned from the Chelbana of the Ketores, which had a foul odor, but yet was one of the Samaneya Ketores. And the Ran explains that the inclusion of the Chelbana is not only beneficial for the Chelbana itself, that it gets to be upgraded and be incorporated into the Ketores, it's beneficial for all the other submanim of the Ketores, because their true potential can only be drawn out when they incorporate the Chalbana with it. And based on that, we understand the Medrash that Amar Le Moshe Eli Yisrael, Mayomru Lifnei Yisbarach Shiasu Tshuva. What should you say to the Ribbono Shalom when you do Tshuva, says the Medrash? Kol Tisa Avon Mekachtov Sha'avon Yevutal Ideas Polis B'Tzibur. That the Avon is going to become Batel through connecting with the Tzibur. And the Tov of each of us is going to be Mitzarif to the broader Cheshbon of goodness in Klal Yisrael. And the idea is that the Avaryanim are nullified in the majority, and yet their presence uplifts the rest of the Tzibur. They are not a drain on society. Klal Yisrael, when we come together, every member of Klal Yisrael in some way uplifts the Klal. And on Chanukah we lay in the parsha of the Chanukah Samishkan by the 12 Nasiim. And it's interesting, Nadav and Avia were punished severely for being Maktir Ketores Yachid, but on the very same day, Nachshon Ben Nadav was Maktir Ketores Yachid, and that was accepted with love. So the obvious way to reconcile it is that Hashem asked for that one. He didn't ask for Nadav and Avihu, but the Yalkut in the end of Parshas Naso comments on the Pasuk, Zos Chanukah Samizbeach, that since each of them, the Siyim, brought exactly the same carbon, it's treated like a carbon Sibur. Essentially the same idea as the Ran, the same idea as the Mari Moscato. By combining individuals together, you tap into a Koach HaTzibur. And that's why Nadav and Avihu were punished so severely for Ketores Yachid, because they weren't tapping in to that Koach HaTzibur. But when the Nasiim brought all together, that or consecutively, that tapped into the Koach HaTzibur. And Chanukah, in a sense, is similar to Sukkot. The Svarim HaKadoshim apparently say that an aura of Chag HaSukkos extends until Chanukah. The Bnei Yisachar has a remez to explain dreidel based on that, also not for now. And we have this idea by Sukkot also. It comes to the Dalet Minim. The Arava represents that which those Jews who have neither Torah nor Ma'asim Tovim. And yet, without the Arava, the Dalet Minim are possible. So the Shlach HaKadosh says that the word Sibur is a Rashi Tevos of Tzadikim Beinonim Urishayim. So if Sukkot represents Achdus, it stands to reason that Chanukah, which is a continuation of that, should also represent Achdus. And that, you know, to cut it short a little bit, it's a much longer drasha, he explains that's the Riboy Sudos on Chanukah. Because there's no greater vehicle for friendship and camaraderie than eating together. So that's why Sudos Chanukah is hinted to in the Suuda of Yosef Achiv, where the Shvatim finally come together again. That's where we're going to have a remnant to Sudas Chanukah, because that's what Chanukah is supposed to represent for us. And that's what the Rama says, that there's a Riboy Su'udos, it taps into that idea of Mishkan, that idea of Mikdash. It's not just a celebration of a miracle. As far as celebration of a miracle, the way Chazal chose to celebrate this miracle is not through Su'udah. But the Rama says, when you want to think about what's going to bring us to a Mikdash, what's going to bring us to a Geula, that's got to be the Tzibur coming together. That has to be all of Knesset Yisrael coming together. And that is accomplished through Riboy Su'udah. And that's where Fisher suggests, that maybe that's one of the messages of Chanukah that one has to incorporate, that we show the light to the rest of the world. The Magen Avraham writes in Tafrei Shayin, poor people go collecting on Chanukah, and maybe that explains why Aniyim go collecting on Chanukah, because we tap into that sense of Achrayus for the Tzar, you know, for the Tzibur rather. I have a friend who, Rabbi Moshe Bamberger, who's Mashkiach in Lander College, used to always say that he always looks for varts that are what we call Hu Haya Omer. You know, Hu Haya Omer is an expression that Chazal have when they introduce something in Pirkei Avos that a particular Tana taught. But he says on a deeper level, Hu Haya Omer means that it's not just something that Tana taught, but the way they live their life is an accurate reflection of that idea of Torah that they like to express. I would like to think that this particular piece of Torah from Rav Shlomo Fisher about the Achdus of Klal Yisrael and using all of Nigla and this to highlight the point. I only gave you like a little bit of it. You have to buy a base Yishai and look at it yourself. But using all of Nigla and Nistar to highlight the point about how every member of Klal Yisrael is connected is a Hu Haya Omer. It was something that he himself stood for, and I thought that it was appropriate that as Klal Yisrael had such a major loss, that I was going to, hijack this opportunity to give everybody a little bit of a sense of a person I didn't really know. I heard him speak a few times. I was blown away, but I didn't understand understand anything, but give people an opportunity to understand what was lost and what kind of Talmud Chacham that we were zocha to have in our midst in Klal Yisrael. And Be'ez Hashem, we should be zocha to see many more people to reach whatever Madrega they can and to appreciate all of the Bali Madrega and all of the great Talmidei Chacham. Recording stopped.